Welcome to Beyond Blathers, the podcast where we dive deeper into the insects, fish, and fossils you can find in Animal Crossing New Horizons. I'm Sophia Osborne.
And I'm Olivia DeBercier.
And if you want to support the show, you can check out our merch store at etsy.com/shop/beyondblathers to see the stickers and postcards we have for sale. You can also join our Patreon to receive a gorgeous monthly sticker and print in the mail from Olivia. So this week, I'm really excited. We are doing part two of our spider chat.
We have a lot to cover today. Pretty much only the hits coming from the spiders today.
All killer, no filler.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing. Well, let's get right into it. Last week, we had a whole, like, insect-related catch-up. But I think today we can just get into it.
Yeah. I mean, this week, it's pretty much the same as last week. Just bugs. All bugs all the time for me these days.
Love that for you.
Yeah, I'm very happy about it. So we left off last week, and we hadn't yet talked about spider reproduction. And so we're going to talk about that now. It's all very weird and wacky, which, I don't know, you probably expect from spiders. So, very exciting. As a reminder from last week's episode, male spiders are generally much smaller than female spiders. So that's important to keep in mind as we go into this.
Yeah, and why is that?
We don't really know for sure. In a lot of bugs, the females being bigger kind of relates to how many eggs she can carry. Like, a bigger body can carry more eggs. But it's also interesting because maybe it's less about the females being big and more about the males being small. Like, their smallness allows them to reach maturity with fewer molts, so they mature faster, meaning that they can move along to the reproductive life stage faster. So at that reproductive stage, they're also very hyperfixated on mating, and so they really just don't bother even thinking about hunting and finding food. They're really just on the prowl for a mate. So it's handy not to have a big, huge body that they have to keep alive with food because it's just really not their priority. These tiny males are also more agile than the female, which is useful because mating requires a lot of energy and it's also quite risky. It's funny because you'd think the lady spider would really have to be worth risking death over, but the males remain relatively unscrupulous about their choices. They just want to find a gal and they want to make sure that they're looking, you know, like appetizing to her, but also not too appetizing. Because as we touched on last week, it's a bit of a myth that female spiders will always eat the males when they're done mating, but it's also partially true. So female spiders will often just mistake a potential mate as prey. So males sometimes have to take a very, like, roundabout approach to get to a female without ending up as a mushed ball of half-digested exoskeleton. So the process usually goes something along the lines of this. As the male approaches a female spider, he's going to have to shoot out a little bit of web, and he'll be holding that web, and then he'll sprinkle out some sperm onto it. And then using these little mini arms near his face called palps, he grabs his, you know, spermy present and he'll creep up to the female. And he does this because he's got to make sure he's got his sperm packet ready to go. The female isn't going to tolerate any fumbling around. This is serious business. In some cases, spider courtship is pretty simple. The male basically just gives the sperm pack to the female. But in most other spiders, there is some kind of elaborate play-by-play that the male needs to lead. The complexity of this behavior is actually pretty important to prevent species from interbreeding, because nothing exposes a lack of genetic compatibility like the male doing a dance that's wildly unfamiliar to the female. So these courtship behaviors can range from what I would consider like a chill behavior to just unhinged behavior. And let's start, of course, with the unhinged. The craziest one I could find was mate guarding. And there are many species of spider where the males will track down an immature female and then camp out right next to her. So he'll build a web, he'll live his life, and the whole time he's waiting for the female to go through her last molt before copulating. And I don't know, I just find that very, you know, a little bit clingy, a little desperate, just like, leave the girl alone. But anyway, a lot of spiders will do this.
It's creepy. Red flag.
Yeah. But it's not just the males behaving a little bit desperate. Let's take the wolf spider. Some wolf spiders, like the thin-legged wolf spider, will create a long drag line of silk. The female will spray her pheromone on this drag line, and it also, if she's noticed that males haven't been all that eager to mate with her lately, that's fine. She'll just, like, spray a few more spritzes of pheromone on there. She's not above it. And then once her drag line is all done, she'll let that silken thread fall to the forest floor as she wanders. The silk line will show where she's been so that when the male comes by, he can follow it all the way to her. Which reminds me of the words of the very great poet. And isn't it just so pretty to think that all along there was some invisible string tying you to me?
Yes, my favorite poet.
Both our favorite poet.
Yes. Yeah, anytime we can put a Taylor Swift reference in, please do.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be able to listen to that song now without thinking about wolf spiders.
I'm sure that's what she was thinking of.
Obviously.
Famed entomologist Taylor Swift.
Famed spider fanatic.
Yes.
Now that I'm thinking of it, I really can't think of any references to spiders at all directly in her lyrics. She's got a lot of snakes.
A lot of snakes. She's more into reptiles, I guess. Maybe that'll be the next era. I could see her in like a Black Widow kind of era.
Oh, that would be good. We should recommend that to her.
Yeah. If she's listening.
Like, can't you just call Taylor up?
Taylor, if you're listening, leave a review.
Yeah, write and review. Of course, you know, speaking of the Black Widow, we really should talk about at least one spider where the female eats the male after they mate. So this behavior is called sexual cannibalism. And it is extremely common among the redback spider, otherwise known as the Australian Black Widow, or the, I think it's also called the false Black Widow. Now, a little heads up, this is pretty gross, so if you're feeling a bit squeamish, maybe hop ahead, like 30 seconds. So, remember how I said that males will put sperm packets on their two palps? Well, for the redback spider, when they're copulating, sometimes copulating in my mind is like such a normal word because we use it a lot in science, but then I'm like, oh yeah, I guess that's not like the best word.
It's very romantic.
Yeah. When they're mating, the male really wants to make sure he gets both of the packets of sperm that he's holding into the female. So he'll draw the mating process out with really what is the wildest solution. The male redback spider is, as I understand, one of maybe only like two groups on the planet who will readily throw himself into sexual cannibalism. Like other animals that do this, like the male is not a willing participant. The other group that does this is the mantises. So while mating, the male redback spider will somersault himself over so that he lands right, like basically he's on top of the female, he'll somersault and he'll land right on the mouth parts of the female, who then begins to eat him while they're mating. So she may eat like the whole male or just a part of him, and then he'll die a day or two later from the wounds. It's absolutely bananas.
Wow. That's pretty amazing.
Like, that is I don't know if it's like amazing or just like, what? What?
Someone has to do it.
Of all the solutions, like, this is why evolution is not, they always say like evolution is kind of dumb. Like, yeah. Evolution's just going to do what it's going to do. This is one of those cases. Like, if you're sad, just be glad you're not a redback spider male. Now, I do want to talk about some more like chill courtship behaviors that are still really cute, just not quite as unhinged as I said before. Some spiders will just do some little leg waving at each other. It's so cute. Like, you see them doing it and it reminds me of the little like, hey, Barbie, hey, Barbie. It's just like this little wave. It's so cute. There are also some jumping spiders that have very fancy get-ups to make their leg waving appear more appealing. There's one group of jumping spiders who have extra fluffy arms covered with these bold blacks and whites. They kind of look like a pirate blouse, you know, when they're waving it around. But then there's also the peacock jumping spider, which is probably one of the most famous species of spider because of its courtship. Like the peacock bird, the jumping spider has a round, iridescently colored cape-like ornament that's laid over its abdomen when it's at rest. But when it's time to impress the female, The spider raises that cape and waves it around just like a regular peacock. And this method works really well for the jumping spider because they have such amazing visual senses for spiders. They want to take advantage of that. And so I highly recommend looking up a video of this. It's kind of adorable. Jumping spiders, I don't know. I really just don't see how you could think of a jumping spider as ugly. In my mind, they're like one of the cutest things on the planet.
Yeah, no, I've seen this video before and it's so, so cute. And just something that I would never think that spiders could do. It definitely seems like such a bird-like behavior. Like you could put it in with the Birds of Paradise mating video or something.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Yeah, I mean, it's so cool. But for most spiders, they don't have a lot of that visual sense, that visual talent. So they take a more sensory approach. Much like a DJ at a rave, some spiders will urgently drum the ground or on a mate's web to create pleasing vibrations for his female. One spider will even drop its own line into the web home of the female to drum his musical vibrations. And I think that is quite inventive. It's like dropping a speaker into someone's house and just playing your own music.
Yeah, it's really romantic. A serenade.
Yeah. Now that we've discussed how spiders will absolutely do the most to pass on their genes, let's talk about their babies. I would say that most people are somewhat familiar with spider reproduction, even if they don't think about it that much. Like, most people probably realize that there's egg sacs because, you know, I've heard people go, oh my gosh, I saw the spider in my house now has an egg sac. I'm doomed. So I think people know that much. And we also know that they're capable of creating hundreds or thousands of eggs. They may even know from the very jarring ending to Charlotte's Web that baby spiders will fly away on strings of silk. And I don't know about you, Sophia, but I always found the Charlotte's Web ending to be deeply depressing, not just because Charlotte dies, spoiler alert, but because her kids just like up and leave. They treat Wilbur like absolutely nothing. Wait, is the pig's name Wilbur?
That sounds right. I haven't.
Okay. It's been a while.
Yeah, I haven't seen or read Charlotte's Web since I was a kid, so.
Yeah, the babies are just like chatting and the pig is grieving. And then he's like hopeful. And then they all just like, they're there for like 5 minutes. They have a little conversation. Then they're like, all right, we're peacing out. Goodbye. And I don't know. I always found that like wild. Oh, and then one of the babies stays. I think that was the happy ending. But I was just like, why don't they just stay? All the farm animals like the spiders. Anyway, I guess it was just being very scientific. Well, let's get into the details of these little spider babies. So spiders can lay anywhere from 1 to 2,500 eggs, which is a lot, depending on the species. The female spider will have stored that sperm from mating. So the eggs are actually fertilized right as they come out of her, not when the mating occurs. The eggs will be nice and well protected because they're laid in a silk little cocoon. And for some spiders, that cocoon might be hidden safely in a web. But for others, like the wolf spider, who's this like van life mom, she's got her cocoon on her back and she is on the move. Even when the babies are hatched, they will cling to her back in layers of up to 100 spiderlings. So if you see a wolf spider in the wild, definitely take a look because sometimes you don't notice until you get close. And then you'll notice like these big spiders running along the sidewalk and they have all these tiny little baby spiders on their back. It's kind of remarkable.
That sounds cool. And I also don't know if I want to see it, but like good for them.
I will say like wolf spiders are kind of like not like they're a little bit ugly. I'll give them that. But you know, it is kind of cute because you're like, oh, this mom is like, she's just living her life running around trying to survive. And she's got like 50 babies on her back. It's kind of impressive.
Okay. I'll give her that. It's impressive.
Yeah. Oddly enough, experiments have shown that these spiderlings could actually probably survive on their own. They're living off their yolk sac energy for the first week or so that they're alive, but they have to hold on really tight and stay focused because they've also found that wolf spiderlings have been jostled off their mother and they've been known to climb onto the backs of other spiders. And I don't know, I feel like we all have this childhood memory of mistaking a stranger for our mother and hugging them. But can you imagine like hopping onto the like back of a stranger for a piggyback ride. Just the humiliation. Once spiderlings are big enough, they'll disperse. And many spiders do so in the most remarkable way. As I said before, they're going to release these strands of thin, long silk. And once the wind catches that silk, it'll carry them really far away. And I think that this has one of the most adorable scientific names for it. It's called ballooning.
Oh, that's really cute. Very evocative.
It is so cute. And like, it's kind of cool. My supervisor, Carol Frost, did a undergrad research project, actually in the lab that she now is like the head of, which is kind of cool. But she had all these spiders living in tanks, and then like the babies would hatch and she'd like test the ballooning skills. And so she'd watch them like balloon with like a fan and stuff. Anyway, I just think that's super adorable.
That's really cool. I like this idea that you just kind of let the wind carry you where it may.
It's quite romantic. And like their name when they're in the air are called aeronauts.
Oh, that's really cute.
Isn't that cute? I should mention that most spiderlings, they'll only travel kind of short distances, at least by our standards. By their standards, they're going on a dramatic journey. But some will also occasionally catch a really strong wind. And when that happens, they can be lifted unbelievably high in the air. Some spiders have even been caught by airplanes that are flying thousands of meters in the air. And some spiders have been found to travel up to hundreds of kilometers. So really, it just depends on the weather, how far they get in a lot of cases. It's really great strategy because it means that spiders can find new habitats relatively quickly and easily, even when they're these tiny little babies. And this is great because they won't be as likely to compete with their siblings. But it also means that they're some of the first animals to colonize new islands, freshly burned forests, or other places that have experienced a natural disaster. Like after the Krakatoa volcano disaster, a spider was one of the first things to colonize the devastated island. So they are really these kind of aeronaut pioneers. But the strategy is also pretty risky. As you can imagine, it leaves the spiderlings vulnerable to being eaten by any number of creatures like birds or other bugs. Or they may land somewhere inhospitable, like splooshing right into a lake or the ocean. But it still works because these spiders are producing so many babies that enough of them survive that they end up being okay. So this is the part of the episode now where I want to talk about basically all the little tidbits and like amazing things that I found when I was researching this episode, like all of the amazing different spiders. And I wanted to do this in a way that's like spider awards. So let's give a bunch of spiders little awards for the weird and wacky things that they can do.
I love that.
Let's start with a simple one, the award for the best dressed spider. Now, this could probably go to the peacock spider that we talked about earlier. But I'm actually pretty partial to the simple crab spider. Not because they look particularly impressive, but because they have the uncanny knack for blending in with the flower that they're hiding in. And this isn't just a coincidence or that they're looking for a flower that fits them, although it's partly that as well. But crab spiders can actually change the color of their bodies. And they change it a little bit just to be a little bit more accurate to the flower that they're hiding in. And I've actually seen this in real life. It happens very quickly and it's very cool. Like they can change from a really bright yellow to more of like a lime green. It's really fascinating.
That's so cool. I didn't realize that spiders could do camouflage. Is that technically camouflage?
Oh yeah, totally. It might not be as advanced as something like a cuttlefish. I mean, not a lot of things are as advanced as a cuttlefish for camouflage, but it's still pretty cool. So next we have the Free Hugs Award. This award goes to the Ouroborid spider, which does not kill its prey using venom. Instead, it does something far worse, where it grabs its prey, covers it in 100 meters of silk, not at all overkill, and squeezes it until it breaks its extremities and asphyxiates. Then, instead of making, you know, little polite fang punctures and sucking out its food, it instead slathers regurgitated digestive enzymes over the victim and then somehow slurps the food out through this muddle of silk and exoskeleton. It's pretty gross and overall just sounds really messy and unnecessary. So I guess I'll still give it the Free Hugs Award for the way that it grabs and squishes its prey, but I do not approve.
It sounds like they should be on an episode of Criminal Minds.
Right? Just like, there's just something so like chaotic about it.
Yeah. It's a little bit sociopathic, not to personify them, but.
It's fine. We also have the Sports Performance Award given to the bolus spider, which is capable of throwing a ball of sticky material at its prey, which is usually small moths, and that's how it catches its food. It's very like, I don't know. I like to imagine a little spider doing like pickleball or something.
That's so cute. I love that. It's like playing like softball.
Yeah, or like dodgeball, I guess.
Yeah, dodgeball.
Next, we have the pirate spider, which has a very cool name already. This spider runs around ringing the doorbell of other spiders' webs by tapping on the silk and creating vibrations that mimic a caught fly in their web. The web's owner, expecting to find food delivered fresh to his doorstep, instead finds that he is in fact the meal. Congrats, pirate spider, you get the 1-star Uber Eats delivery award.
Oh, I love these.
Yeah, that one, I'm like, that's just such an evil genius move. It's so good. It really is. Oh, but this one is better. So some tropical jumping spiders specialize on eating ant prey along the branches of the rainforest. And we all know I love ants. I'm fascinated by them, and I'm fascinated by their predators. Because the last thing this little jumping spider needs is to be trampled by vengeful ants when its prey releases alarm pheromones and they all come running. So when the jumping spider manages to capture an ant, it immediately bungee jumps off the branch and is held only by its silk. It'll just be like swinging there with its ant prey. And then as the ants run desperately back and forth on the branch above looking for their sister in peril, the jumping spider enjoys its meal in peace. So congrats, jumping spider. You win the Dash and Dine Award. The strongest web award has to go to the Darwin bark spider. So shout out to this little dude who not only produces the strongest fiber known to us all, like truly the strongest thing ever. They're like mystified by it. But it also shoots this fiber out like 25 meters across. It crosses entire rivers. And it does this to attach its web to a branch across the river. And then it can create a huge orb web over the water. And it does this to catch mayflies as they come out in big emergences. It does an amazing job because no other spiders have figured out how to catch bugs in this niche. So it's nice. It's got those mayflies all to itself.
That is so cool.
It is really so cool. Actually, there were a lot of articles about the engineering of spiders' webs, but I have my limits to what I understand, and that was my limit. I was like, I can't interpret this.
I need more, like, an animated Spider-Man that's, like, spiders, like, actual spiders and all their cool abilities and, like, I don't know, them trying to hunt each other.
Yeah, like, also the ballooning thing just made me think, I was like, oh, man, like, Spider-Man could just, like, fly, not glide. I know Spider-Man has a lot of gliding mechanisms, and I'm sure there's, in some comic somewhere, he flies. But, like, he could just balloon everywhere.
Yeah.
I guess he kind of does that. Sometimes he'll like grab like a plane that's flying over, but still.
I mean, I feel like he has to have some Darwin bark spider genes because Spider-Man's webs are like so strong. They can like hold a plane to the earth.
I mean, he's gotta. I think we should just write our own Spider-Man comic on all these facts.
For real.
Okay, next award. Just like a vampire in the sun, the glittery web of the golden orb weaver shines yellow in the sun where moths can't help but be drawn to it. So I have to give the golden orb weaver the Edward Cullen Award for glittery webs.
Aww.
Next we have, okay, honestly, what is my favorite one? And I think this is just because I'm obsessed with aquatic insects, but this is the Little Mermaid Award, which I just have the pleasure of giving to the diving bell spider, a remarkable little creature that builds a web between marine plants underwater. When the spider surfaces, air gets trapped in their little hairs, and then the spider swims down to its web where the air bubbles fill the web, creating a little mini pocket of air underwater. Now, the spider can swim around safely, exploring its underwater world and finding food to eat, which it can snack on in the comfort of its own little pocket of the world up above.
Whoa, that is one of the coolest things I've ever heard.
It is so cool. And, like, apparently, too, the web filters out carbon dioxide so that it's, like, really concentrated oxygen. So it's just, like, literally a little scuba diving spider.
I had no idea that there were underwater spiders. That's so cool.
I think
it's
like the only one, or it's of a very small group. There are, I actually didn't talk about them in this series of episodes, but there's also fishing spiders, which will basically walk on water. We have a lot of them here, and they can get quite large, like loony, toony sized. That's like, I don't know, half an inch across. Next, we have the Top Gun Award for a speedy spider, and this goes to Hypiotes cavatus, which uses its web to catapult itself so fast that it reaches a g-force 8 times higher than the force a fighter pilot experiences in order to capture its prey. Again, extremely excessive, but also very cool.
Wow. Take that, Tom Cruise.
That's right.
You have nothing on this spider.
He should have been called Hypiotes instead of whatever the hell that guy's name. Wait, what's his name in it?
No idea.
What's his character's name? Maverick.
Oh, that's his name?
He should have been called Hypiotes instead of Maverick. Yeah, that's like his character name.
Oh.
Or his like nickname as a pilot.
Well, why is the sequel called Top Gun Maverick then?
Because it's weird. Like, it's just like him. I don't know.
I haven't seen either, if it's not clear.
We only make Taylor Swift references here for a reason. Next, we have the Wild Wild Party Award, which goes to the Long-Jawed Orb Weaver. This spider, on occasion, gets together with its orb weaver friends and potential mates. And pretty much overnight, these orb weavers have been known to cover entire lengths of beaches along Grecian coasts and elsewhere in the world with these thick, sticky webs, and it really does look like a blanket. Like, it's pretty gross, but also really cool. I don't know. It's just very much a party I don't want to be around to clean up after.
They're living it up in Europe.
Yeah. I also want to give an honorary award to a group of humans, not a spider this time. This award is called the Long Live Twitter Award and goes to the people who keep the light shining in the dark world of Elon's website X. This award goes to the account @recluseornot, where people send in photos of virtually every spider under the sun and ask an expert if it's a brown recluse. And the site will usually tell you no, because like for 99% of the spiders, the answer is no, it's not a recluse. It's like a wolf spider, a grass spider. But it is very interesting because you can see how difficult spider ID becomes. And it's actually a very fun website to practice your spider ID because they tell you what family the spider is from, or sometimes the species as well. And that point, probably not very useful to any of our audience, but it's helpful for me because I literally just had a spider ID test today. So I was using this website practice a little bit. And last but not least, we of course have to give an award for the most venomous spider of all, the funnel web spider from Down Under. These spiders are usually pretty shy and prefer to hang out in dark holes in the ground. But when mating season rolls around, the males are out and are looking for mates. In this process, they can get a bit carried away and end up wandering so far from their home that they end up needing to find a place to hide during the day. Because, like eight-legged vampires, these spiders really only come out at night. They do not like the light because they think they're going to get eaten. Unfortunately for humans, this often means that they end up under porches, in living room crevices, or God forbid, your shoe. The bite of a funnel web spider is painful. They have fangs about 1 centimeter long, and their venom can kill a human very quickly. One report I read said 76 minutes. Another was bold enough to say 15. So let's just take that as it can do it really fast.
Every day I'm thankful that I don't live in Australia.
See, this is, I have the opposite reaction. I go, wow, Australia has some really cool stuff. I love to go there.
Yeah, cool from a distance.
I don't know. Again, maybe I'll go to Australia and then I'll suddenly realize I actually hate bugs so much.
Yeah, maybe. How does the venom actually kill people?
The venom contains a protein called delta hexotoxin. In a nutshell, when the protein enters your bloodstream, it confuses your neurons by allowing the neurotransmitters, so the stuff that tells your body what to do, it allows those neurotransmitters to flow freely without any stopping mechanisms. So your body basically gets flooded with neurotransmitters like adrenaline, which makes your muscles begin to receive all kinds of confusing messages. So they basically just start to glitch. Your muscles will like tense randomly and spasm. And then that causes your heart rate to increase quite dramatically. And the protein ends up getting pushed around your body even more because of that. Eventually, what happens is your body runs out of neurotransmitters, which means that your muscles don't know what to do. And this eventually leads to getting paralyzed and death. Wildly enough, this venom isn't actually toxic to most other animals. And like, even with humans, the venom really isn't meant to kill humans. Like, what is a spider going to be doing with a dead human? What the venom is meant for is bugs. But we have had this sort of bad genetic luck, which just sort of means that humans react to it, that primates react to it. But amazingly, because of the hard work of scientists and healthcare workers, antivenom is available, and actually no one has died from these spiders since 1981. So congrats to them.
Wow, that's heartening to hear.
Yeah, it's really cool. And like, antivenom is, you get it from the actual spider. And so there's a lot of people who like actively are sucking the venom out of these spiders in like a lab situation. So it's a lot of work, but obviously it's worth it. People's lives are being saved. Now, I could go on about spiders, but unfortunately, that'll have to do for now. I mean, even just now, I was thinking about the fishing spiders, and I start thinking about all these other amazing spiders we could talk about, but we do have to end at some point. So I hope you leave this episode feeling a bit more appreciative of spiders, and maybe if there's one in your shower tomorrow morning, instead of, you know, having a little spook and a little scream, you can just be like, hey, buddy, let me calmly get you out of here so you can go about and eat the pests that we don't like and just hang out in the sun. So that's what I wish for you this week.
Yeah, I definitely feel a change in my attitude even from last week. So you are
doing...
Well,
that makes me happy.
You're spreading the good word.
Yeah, spiders are really so cool. And also, they're so common. Like, they're everywhere. And like, I don't know, when you... I will tell a really nerdy story, and this is 100% true. I'm not exaggerating this, but I went to a friend's like party, backyard fire hangout, I don't know, like a month ago. And we were all sort of entomology people and our partners. And my friend was like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited that you are all here. I can finally show you the orb weaver in our garage. And we were like, oh my gosh, yes, of course, go show us. And she like brings us to the garage, and in the window, there's this beautiful orb weaver that, I don't know, is probably like 2 centimeters in diameter. Like, it was pretty big. And we probably stood there for like 10 minutes watching the spider like oohing and aahing. It was like the highlight of the party. We were all so excited about that. The spider, we've got our beers. We're all just like hanging out, admiring this, like, it was like an orb weaver with little like cat ear shapes on its butt. It was really cool, and like had a beautiful web. And so, you know, when you appreciate spiders, you just have like a simple moment of just appreciating nature with your friends. It's very nice.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much, Olivia, for all your hard work with this two-parter. It was just so great. And thank you all so much for listening and tuning in and learning about spiders with us. If you want to support the show, you can join our Patreon to get exclusive rewards, and you can also check out our Etsy shop to see all the stickers and postcards we have for sale.
You can also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok.
Tune in next week to learn more about the insects, fish, and fossils you can find in Animal Crossing New Horizons. Bye!
Bye!